Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on natural disasters when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, and we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if a carpenter said that? He who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client. Doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself has to be just as incompetent. Just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Now listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said. He said, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, it is a cruel hoax. Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school. The number's 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about disasters. Every time you turn on the TV, every time you pick up a newspaper, there'll be a screaming headline in there. You know, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions in Sicily, or in Hawaii, or in Alaska. We have earthquakes with tsunami waves in the Indian Ocean that kills a quarter of a million people. And we call these disasters. We call these catastrophes. Now, when I went to school, they told us about the theory of evolution and how these catastrophes are just random chance. You know, it's always been this way. The Earth is slowly cooling from its Big Bang billions and billions of years ago. And because of that, it's been fractured. You know, the Earth's crust is fractured, and so you got to expect some tectonic movement from time to time. But there's another story out there that maybe you've never heard of before. And so last time I brought it to your attention. I brought to you Leviticus chapter 26, and I said, there's a guy in here who claims to be God. And he says, I'm doing this to you, and I'm doing this to you for a reason. And the reason that I'm doing this to you is called sin, S-I-N, commonly known as crime in modern vernacular today. Because of your criminal behavior, you Americans and Canadians and Australians and you Chinese and you Japanese and you Africans, because of your criminal behavior, I'm going to send upon you these disasters, these catastrophes. Now, most people today, at least here in the United States of America, when you tell them something like that, they look at you like, you know, you've suffered from the terminal stupids. You probably need to be committed for 90 days for psychiatric evaluation. We need to probe your brain, son, find out what the hell's the matter with you. But I thought I'd bring to your attention that there's another side to this coin. You know, when you pick up a coin, there's two sides, heads and tails. When you're looking down the middle of the highway, there's two sides to the highway, right and left. When you're looking up in the sky, there's two sides to that. There's up and there's down. But for some reason, when you talk about life and the cosmos, there's only one answer. There's just evolution. There's no God. Now, of course, religious people, they take the other side. There's no science. There's no reason, logic, or common sense. There's just God. And what's worse, it's just their version of God. It doesn't have to be objective. We don't have to have any standards. It's just, well, I'm a Catholic, and here's my version of God, or you're a Lutheran, or you're a Muslim, or whatever. Is there a third answer out there? Is there something out there beside religion and beside pseudoscience called evolutionary philosophy? Is there a third answer out there that might tell us what's going on, why, for how long, when, when's it going to terminate, and what's going to be the outcome? Has anybody ever thought of that? Well, let me pique your curiosity a little bit. Last time we were talking about Leviticus 26, and we stopped here at about verse 26. I'm going to flip over now to Matthew chapter 24. And in Matthew 24, now this is Jesus speaking here, sir. This is sweet Jesus away in the manger. And all you religious guys out there, now you can relate here to Jesus. New Testament theology. See, I'm coming out of the Old Testament here. See, for most of you people that don't know, the Old Testament's been abolished, done away with, and nailed to the cross with Jesus. That's the Christian side of the story. That's their philosophy. Jesus didn't know that. He was kind of ignorant concerning the Old Testament. And he said in Matthew 4, verse 4, that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. He said that in Matthew 4, 4, and he said it twice. It was reported twice in the New Testament. In Luke 4, 4 and Matthew 4, 4. He cited that from Moses. It's a direct citation from Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. Jesus was totally out of touch with reality, did not understand the Old Testament being abolished, done away with, and nailed to the cross with Jesus. He didn't know that. So I thought I'd throw that one in there for a little kicker. Now I want to throw one more in here for another kicker from an old plumber. When Jesus made that statement in Matthew 4, verse 4, not one word of the New Testament had been written yet. So when he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, the only words that had proceeded out of his mouth up to that point in time were the 39 books of the Old Testament, from which he cited Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. When he made that statement, he cited it right out of the Old Testament. You know, you take it from there, you theologians that go to seminary. I'm just a reporter. Now, his disciples came up to him one day and they said, hey boss, would you tell us what are going to be the signs of the times when the end of the world comes? You ever heard of the end of the world? When I was a little kid, 4 years old, I heard about the end of the world. Religious people have been talking about the end of the world since the cows went out to the pasture. And we've been waiting for it for thousands of years and it ain't happened yet. Well, we keep hoping, we keep waiting, we keep hoping, but it hadn't happened yet. Paul Volcker came in 1979-80 and he bailed us out. And then Alan Greenspan, he came in 87, he bailed us out again. And we're all sitting here on the edge now watching the war in the Middle East and wondering, well, when is this going to escalate into World War III and Armageddon? And then there's some other big problems going on. Remember, I mentioned this the other day. You've got these big wildfires. Here in the United States, the average wildfire was consuming about 2 million acres a year. Now it's up to 10 million, five times as much. I got a fire going as I speak down here in Georgia, down the Okefenokee Swamp. And that fire down there is nearly 800 square miles. Our county, Ozark County, Missouri, is 800 square miles. Hell, that fire is as big as our county. Burned everything in our county. Just picture that. You got the worst drought in the history of the West. Well, at least in the last 500 years of history. Because about 500 years ago, based upon tree ring dating, they figured that the flow of the Colorado River was down around, 6-7 million acre feet a year. It's down to 5 million acre feet a year now. Down from a normal back, 30-50 years ago, 15 million acre feet a year. So it was running 15. Historically, it's been as low as 7. Today, it's down to 5. Worst drought in history going on right now in the Colorado Basin. Out in the West, you got a 7-year drought. You got global warming, and 1/3 of the ice pack in the Arctic Ocean has melted off. You got big blocks of ice melting off of Antarctica. Then you got these super-duper earthquakes. Earthquakes that are hitting 8 and 9 on the Richter scale, causing tidal waves that are killing 250,000 people like they did out in the Indian Ocean. That's coming around, every few years now. You had a big earthquake, killed 100,000 people there in Kashmir. And so that's what I've started to report on here for you, is that what's causing all these things? Well, Jesus was asked that very question. Believe it or not, he was asked that very question. Listen to this. It's in Matthew 24. Jesus went out and he departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. So Jesus said to them, "Well, see you not all these things? Truly I say to you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." That's verse 2. Now over there in Jerusalem today, there's a piece of real estate there called the Temple Mount, and there's a wall there. The Jews call it the Wailing Wall. Now did you hear what Jesus said? He said, "Do you see these buildings here?" He said, "I'm telling you right now, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." Well, the last time I saw some pictures of that Wailing Wall, there were still two stones standing on top of one another. Notice he didn't say this temple's going to be destroyed. That happened in 70 AD. The temple was, in fact, destroyed. He went a step further. He said not one stone will be left standing on another. That's pretty specific now. Last time I looked over there were several stones standing on top of one another. Billy Graham was talking one time, and he said, "Christ could come tonight." Excuse me, Billy. Jesus said he ain't coming until not one stone is left on top of another one. Boys and girls, as long as there's two stones stacked on top of each other there in Jerusalem at that Temple Mount site, you can sit back and breathe a sigh of relief. He ain't coming tonight. In fact, I'm going to make a prophecy. Based upon this prophecy right here, Jesus ain't coming tonight. Now, when you see that Wailing Wall knocked down and not one stone standing on another one, you should start getting real nervous real fast, kind of like a whore in church. When I see all those stones knocked down, and the Jews over there, they've got all of the accoutrements for the new temple. They're going to build a new temple over there. And when they build the new temple, they're going to build it right there on Solomon's site of the old temple. And when they do that, they're going to stir up a lot of hate and discontent. Well, that's what Jesus said. No, I don't know any more than what I just see here in the papers. And so Will Rogers used to say. Verse 3, he said, "As he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, and they said, tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world?" Tell us what the sign of your coming is going to be. Hell, he was already there with them. What do you mean, the sign of your coming? They're sitting right there with the boss. And they said, "Hey, tell us about the sign of your coming." They knew about the second coming. They knew about the first coming. They'd read the prophecies in Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, and the minor prophets and Daniel. They knew about that. They knew he was the Messiah. They knew what he was there for. They knew he was going to die. They knew he was going to come back. That's what all of us are waiting for. Now, they thought he was coming back in their lifetimes. You know, my Aunt Bessie thought he was coming back in her lifetime. Everybody has been taught from the Scripture that Jesus is coming back. Kind of like Douglas MacArthur coming back to the Philippines. He said, I shall return. Well, Jesus said the same thing. He said, I shall return. And when I come back, he said, there's going to be some big signs that go on preceding my second coming. There's going to be some big events. And you can rest assured that CNN and Fox News will be there to cover the event. In fact, when the second coming occurs, there's no doubt in my mind that you can watch it on CNN, live and direct, wherever you are. Because in this prophecy, he said, every eye shall see and everyone's going to behold it. Well, you know, if you're in California and he's coming back to the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem, you know, unless you're Superman with X-ray vision, can look through the middle of the earth, I don't think you're going to see him come back. Unless it's being shown on CNN by way of satellite from Jerusalem to Los Angeles. So, you know, let's wake up and pay attention, smell the coffee here. He makes another statement. In verse 4, Jesus answered and said to them, you take heed that no man deceive you. Now, evidently, there's going to be a lot of deception going on. Because the first words out of his mouth, he said, watch out, kids, because there's going to be somebody come along and try to deceive you. Do you mean to tell me there might be a George Bush or a Dick Cheney or a Billy Graham or an Oral Roberts come along here and stroke you a little bit and maybe lie to you? Just a little bit, not a whole bunch, but, you know, lie to you a little bit, maybe deceive you. Because the first words out of his mouth weren't, oh, watch out for a big earthquake and tsunami over in the Indian Ocean, or watch out for volcanic eruptions, or a put-on war, a false flag war in Iraq. He said, first thing you got to be concerned with, boys and girls, is deception. You're going to get deceived. In fact, there's a little story that goes along with that. Let me skip ahead here a little bit. Don't you try this, because you probably get lost here. But flipping over here to Revelation 12, verse 9, there's a statement here that says, the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Did you catch that clause there says, which deceiveth the whole world? Well, Jesus made that observation. He says, hey, watch out, you don't get deceived here, kids. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. Well, have you heard of any preachers coming along saying, just believe in Jesus? Have you heard that? Have you heard of a lot of preachers coming around telling you about Jesus and Him crucified? And just believe in Jesus. You've heard that, I suppose. Well, here's the boss himself says, you want to watch out for those clowns because they're lying deceivers. Now, I never asked you to believe me. I already told you I was a pathological liar a long time ago. And oftentimes when I'm speaking to a group of people, I say, are there any liars here in the audience? And everybody looks at me like I'm suffering from the terminal stupids. So I have to ask them a second time. I say, is anybody in here who's a liar? Nobody raises his hand. They just kind of look at you. And so I raised my hand and said, well, I'm a liar. I told a lie one time a long, long, long time ago. I told a lie to my mama. Then I asked the audience, I said, did you people out there in the audience ever tell a lie to your mama or your daddy or your Aunt Bessie? Long, long time ago. Not recently, just long time ago. And then reluctantly, everybody kind of raises his hand. They say, yeah, I remember a long time ago I told a lie. I said, okay, then all of us then admit that we're past tense liars, aren't we? Then everybody will kind of reluctantly say, yeah, I guess you're right, Mr. Gordon. I guess long time ago, past tense, we were liars. Okay. I said, is there any possibility that you people might lie one more time before you die? Yeah, sometime out in the future, long time out in the future, but maybe you're going to lie to somebody one more time. The IRS, the insurance company. And so I raised my hand and I said, well, I kind of expect that before I die, I'll probably lie one more time. I lied once in the past to my mama, and I kind of suspect that one more time out in the future, I'm going to lie one more time, probably to the insurance company when I'm filing a claim. Maybe to the IRS when I'm filing my taxes. Might tell the white lie on my tax return. I says, any of you people out there in the audience going to do that? And they'll all just kind of look at one another, and well, then they kind of raise their hand and say, yeah, I could visualize that. I'll probably lie one more time on my tax return or on my insurance claim or something like that. Okay, so you're a liar in the past and you're a liar in the future. Now, any of you people in here ever told a lie recently, you know, in the last week or 10 days? Told the cop, you know, that you were driving 55 when you were really going 75, you know, when he stopped you ran that red light over there and they got a picture of it, you know, and you said, well, I didn't run that red light. Or you were over at Martha's and she said, oh, Martha, that was wonderful dinner. It was really sucked, you know, it was really crap, but you know, you didn't want to hurt Martha's feelings, and so you told her, you know, that was really wonderful, you know, chicken and dumplings. And most people, you know, I've always raised my hand and say, yeah, I've lied. You know, I tell people things, you know, that aren't true. Make them feel good. Stroke them a little bit. And so then people will raise their hands a little bit. So, okay, now let's go back to square one. I ask you how many people out there were liars. And you didn't fess up, but then you admitted that you lied in the past, you're going to lie in the future, and you've lied recently, so you're a liar, past, present, and future. Isn't that what a liar is? A liar is somebody that lies in the past, lies in the future, and lies right now? Okay, well, I'm one of those. And the reason I knew that is because the scripture says, let God be true, though every man be found a liar. So I figured that, well, shucks. I was a liar. I figured every man would be found a liar. Now, here's Jesus in Matthew 24 now, remember? He says, now, don't get deceived by thinking that you're not a liar. Don't get deceived by these Christians out here telling you about Jesus and him crucified, because the whole world has been deceived. And I looked at that and said, well, surely I couldn't be deceived. You know, I could picture you out there being deceived, but me, little Georgie Gordon, I'm too smart for that. Aren't you? I mean, I could be deceived, but you can't be deceived, can you? Now, if that statement's true, and if the scripture means what it says the whole world has been deceived, and that includes George Bush and Dick Cheney. I think those two guys have been deceived, just like me and Billy Graham and Oral Roberts and Jerry Falwell. We all got it all at the same time. It's called deception. You believed a lie. So Jesus comes along, he says, now be careful now that you don't believe a bunch of lies coming down the pike. Now he gets a little more specific here about verse 5. He says, for many shall come in my name saying, I am Christ, and they shall deceive many. They're going to preach about Jesus. They're going to preach about Christ. They're going to preach about the Bible. And they're going to deceive many in the process. So of those 330,000 Christian preachers in America, 330,000 what we got here in this country, a bunch of those guys are going to go out and they're going to be telling stories about Jesus next Sunday, and they're going to be lying to you and deceiving you. How do I know that? Jesus just told me. The boss himself just told me that. Some of them are going to be telling the truth and some of them are going to be lying. And how are you going to figure out which one's which? He goes on a step further and he said, you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. Verse 6. See that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end isn't yet. Boys and girls, I've been around here for a long time, and I can tell you that for my entire lifetime, I've heard nothing but wars and rumors of wars from the day I was born. There was talk of World War II, and as soon as World War II was over, we had all these little insurrections in Europe and all over the world. There was 40 wars fought between 1945 and 1965, 20 years. 40 wars in that 20-year period. It's two wars a year. From 1965 on, there's just been one war after another worldwide, going on all the time. You got wars going on today. Now the boss says, see that you be not troubled. Don't worry about that. The end isn't yet. So when I hear Billy say, Christ could come tonight, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. You got rocks stacked on top of each other on the Wailing Wall, and you got wars and rumors of wars, and the boss says the end ain't yet. That isn't it. Taint ready yet. So if you're waiting for Jesus to come back, I think you're going to be waiting a long time. Take a pot of coffee with you, you know. Verse 7, he says, for nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All right. We had an earthquake in the Indian Ocean, caused a tidal wave, killed 250,000 people. We had an earthquake over in Kashmir, this is just in the last couple of years, and it killed 100,000 people. Hey, boys and girls, I took a little sachet through the earthquake story here on the internet, and here's what I found out from, about the last 500 years. If you take a look at earthquakes over the last 500 years, they're becoming more frequent and more violent. More frequent and more violent. And of course, there's more people in the world living in these earthquake areas, and so they kill more people. That's a natural consequence of it. But I just wanted to let you know that that prophecy there has come to pass right there in your earballs. It's right in front of your eyeballs. He says, all these are the beginning of sorrows. So this isn't the second coming yet. This is just the beginning of sorrow. This isn't the hard part yet. There's even more sorrow than that coming. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my namesake. I haven't been killed yet. You wait until they take me out and kill me, and then you can say, hey, they killed old Gordon over there. If you practice the Ten Commandments and the laws of God, you will be hated by everybody. Test it. Test it. Walk into your local Baptist or Lutheran or Catholic church and announce to them that you're going to keep the Sabbath on Saturday from now on because that's what the Bible requires. Go ahead. I dare you. You just go into church and you tell them that you're going to practice virginity and that you're not going to go out and get laid by the neighbor boy and his Chevy van girls, and you find out just how many friends you have left in your church. No, sir, you're not going to practice the Ten Commandments in church, not in Christian churches, not in America. You're not going to have any friends here practicing the Ten Commandments. In fact, if you advocate practicing the law of God and the Ten Commandments in your church, you will be excommunicated. Test me. Try it. Go tell your preacher over there. You're going to stop using Federal Reserve notes, checks, and credit cards, and you're going to use gold coin. And put your offering in the plate next week. Put it in there in gold and silver coin and see what the preacher says to you. See if that preacher doesn't tell you. Now, we appreciate your offering, but would you quit putting those $20 gold pieces into the offering plate? And would you please put your check, your credit card, or your money order, or your Federal Reserve notes in there instead so that we can spend them down at Walmart? Test me. Verse 10, he says, then shall many be offended and shall betray one another, and they shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many. False prophets? False prophets? Kind of reminds me of Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and Jerry Falwell. Not that I want to leave anybody out, like Jim Baker. A couple of these other evangelists out here, but... Here, let me flip over here to a little statement here. It's in Matthew 7, because there's a lot of religious people. A lot of you people out there are religious. Well, in Matthew 7:21, here's what Jesus said. He says, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. And many will say unto me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, and in your name cast out devils, and in your name done many wonderful works, and fed a lot of winos and stumble bums down on Skid Row and the soup kitchens? And in verse 23 he said, and then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you that work iniquity, lawlessness. You that won't practice the Ten Commandments, you that won't practice the statutes and the judgments. Now listen, this is just the prelude to catastrophe and disaster, and I wanted to bring this to your attention because I'm not sure that those lying, deceiving Christian preachers out there are doing that. At least I ain't heard any of them doing it. I haven't heard any of them stand up in church and say, hey listen, this Hurricane Katrina, it's the direct result of sin, boys and girls. Direct result, you break my law, I'm going to break you. Now I showed you that last time. I said, the boss said, you give me the finger, and I'm going to lean on you, and I'm going to punish you 7 times more for your sins. Now, I don't know how bad 7 times worse than Katrina can get, but you people down on the Gulf Coast, you've been through this once. That's once. He said, I'm going to get you 7 times harder the next time. Now, I know that your insurance broker said, oh, this is just a once-in-a-100-year hurricane. That's what they said in 93. They said, this is just once in a 100-year flood on the Mississippi River. And then the other day, I see we got a flood up here on the Missouri River. And then they said, well, see, it's not a record breaker, but it's in the top four. Well, maybe the next time Hurricane Katrina won't be a class five. Maybe it'll only be a class four. And maybe it won't hit New Orleans. No, maybe it'll hit Mobile, Alabama instead. You people down in Mobile, Tallahassee, Tampa, Fort Lauderdale, Corpus Christi, Brownsville. Hey, and just because, you know, you only killed 1,000 people, you know, this last time, did it ever occur to you that you might kill 50, 100, 200,000 the next time? I mean, it's happened in the past. So my common sense said, hey, listen, maybe we ought to look at the other side of the coin. That's why I thought I'd suggest to you that there's two sides to this coin. You got the evolutionary philosophy that this is just a random chance. It's a chance event. But hey, kids, when you got drought in the West, the worst in 500 years, you got wars cooking over here in the Middle East, which is where Armageddon's coming, you know, over here in Palestine. Yeah, global warming. You got a national and worldwide economy on the brink of collapse. Then you got these earthquakes and tidal waves and one thing. And hey, isn't this kind of leading up to the perfect storm? Hell, I haven't hit it all yet. I'm just kind of touching on some of the periphery here. Wait till we come back after the break and I'll tell you the rest of the story. That's what Paul Harvey used to say. Meanwhile, back on the farm, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law, our website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. And that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and a date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about disasters and catastrophes. My contention is that the news media overhypes a lot of these events that transpire. It is true that this fire going on down in Georgia is a bad fire. It's causing a lot of damage. But it's not killing a million people. It's not killing 100,000 people. It's a part of an overall program by your Creator, live and direct, speaking to you through Matthew 24, who says, you know, you people have been giving me the finger long enough, and I've had about a belly full of you. And I'm going to lean on you now. First of all, I'm going to give you drought. I'm going to turn your heaven to iron and your earth to brass. You ever heard that statement before? Well, let me flip back here to Leviticus 26. I think it's right at the top of the page here. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, third book of the Bible. In Leviticus 26, verse 19, says, I'm going to break the pride of your power, and I'm going to make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. And your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield or increase, and neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruit. Now that's drought. You got the worst drought here in the United States in history, going on right now in the western United States. In fact, here in the Midwest, we've got a double whammy coming up. You see, after the last great depression and great drought in the 1930s, We woke up and said, well, we've had it. We're going to drill holes in the ground, and we're going to tap the aquifers. And we did. And the aquifers are about tapped out. And we're sucking water out of them faster, like the Ogla Ogla aquifer here in the Midwest. Covers about 7, 8, 9 states. 40% of the American agricultural production comes from irrigation from that aquifer, and it's going dry in 16 years. You got that? Going dry in 16 years. So just put that on the perfect storm, along with global warming and earthquakes and famines and droughts and wars and rumors of wars. And just kind of put that together now. Remember, we're talking about Matthew 24 here. And see if this isn't leading up to the perfect storm. The perfect storm. Economic collapse coupled with great drought. Coupled with economic collapse. Coupled with agricultural collapse. And what do you think that's going to do? Now, remember, the boss said, now I'm going to lean on you with Hurricane Katrina. I'm going to give you some plagues, and I'm going to give you some signs and wonders. And then he goes on and he says, if you will not be reformed by me by this, I will punish you 7 times more for your sins. Now, that personal pronoun I appears in Leviticus 26 20 times. Now, when Al-Qaeda sets off a bomb, you give them credit. And when the Palestinians set off a bomb and raise hell with you, you give them credit. When God raises hell with you, you ignore him and say he doesn't exist, and it's just random chance. It's a once-in-a-100-year storm. And that ticks him off even more, because he told you very plainly, he said, don't forget about me. Hey, don't forget about me. And I'm the guy that's doing this to you. Now, in Matthew 24, he goes on, there's a couple more little statements over. He says, now, because iniquity shall abound and the love of many shall wax cold. Iniquity is lawlessness. He says, because iniquity, lawlessness, criminal behavior shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Now, love, L-O-V-E, I know, that's laying the neighbor girl in the back of your Chevy van, but let me show you what the definition of love is here from the Scripture. This is a wild new concept, letting the Bible interpret the Bible instead of the preacher telling you what that means. Because see, if I came in here and I said, well, let me explain to you what love means, you know, that would be my private interpretation. And the Scripture says very plainly, the Scripture is of no private interpretation. So what George Gordon thinks love means is irrelevant and immaterial. But I want to emphasize that what Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and Jerry Falwell think love means is irrelevant and immaterial. But here's what the boss says it means. In 1 John 5, verses 2 and 3, he says, by this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep his commandments. There's your clue. When we keep his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous. Now, if you want to know what love is, the Scripture tells you very plainly. Love is keeping the commandments. Now, I told you here in Matthew 24, he says, because iniquity shall abound, the love of many, that is, the practice of the law of God, shall wax cold. But he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. So if you're looking for salvation, you know, you Baptists out there and Lutherans and Christians, if you're looking for salvation, you'd probably do a lot better practicing the Ten Commandments. I think you'd do better practicing the Ten Commandments than going to church every Sunday. I know it's a wild new concept to you, but mull it over. Verse 14 says, "This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. And when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, then let him which be in Judea flee to the mountains, and let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days." You girls out there want to have babies, huh? you want to be having a nursing baby when this thing comes to pass? Boss told you, woe unto you. So you might want to tuck that one away in your child planning here. He said, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be again." Now, I'm just looking here at Noah's flood. Now, listen to this statement again. He said, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world." There's never been anything between the Garden of Eden and this great tribulation that's going to match it. I guess that would include Noah's flood. And I thought Noah's flood was a pretty severe catastrophe. When you kill everybody in the world but 8 people, that sounds like catastrophe to me. And then he said, there's never been anything like what's coming down. Not even Noah's flood. Furthermore, there's a little bit more to the story. Only 10% of the people living on planet Earth when this event transpires are going to survive it. 10%. Now, there's about 6 billion people in the world. The last time I heard, 6.5. We're pushing up towards 7. He said 10%. About 6 to 700 million people are going to survive this. That's the good news. The bad news is that 90% are going to die in it. 9 out of 10. And that's why I think he said there's never been anything like this. So some time back, I got to mulling this over a little bit, and I thought, you know, giving this guy the finger probably isn't one of our brighter, more intelligent moves. Now, boys and girls, what do you think? I think, kind of like my old daddy, you know, I used to push, you know, if you're a kid, you know, you like to push the old man, see how far you can push him. And so, you test him. You know, the old man says, make your bed, take out the garbage, mow the grass, you know. And so, well, you make your bed and you take out the garbage, but you don't mow the grass. And when the old man comes home and says, how come you didn't mow the grass? Well, I made my bed, washed the dishes, and took out the garbage. All right, now you pushed. Now what's he going to do? Well, you know, if you guessed it right, he probably isn't going to whip you. He'd probably tell you, now get out there and mow that grass. And so you go out and mow the grass. Well, you got away with something. You see, you defied Dad. You didn't do what you were told. You didn't do it when you were told to do it, and you didn't get whipped. You got away with it. Most of the time you can do that. You push the old man. I used to do that. Well, then next time we'll push him a little bit further. Next time we'll mow the grass, take out the garbage, but we won't make the bed. And so the old man comes home, he looks in your bedroom, he says, what is this pigsty in here? You didn't make your bed. Well, I mowed the grass, I took out the garbage, I washed the dishes. Get in there and make your bed. Okay, well now you defied the old man a second time. And now you got away with it twice, didn't you? Remember how that used to work? Of course, you could do this to your mom all day long. She never did wake up to reality. The old man, he's a little smarter than that. He's always smarter than the old lady. But you know, you're pushing, aren't you? And then one day, you thought, well, I'll push him a little bit further this week. I'll see if I can push him a little bit further. And then one day, you didn't mow the grass, and you didn't make the bed, and you didn't take out the garbage, and you didn't mow the grass, and you didn't wash the dishes, and you know. And so the old man comes home, he said, well, I'm getting around to it. And the old man comes unhinged. He takes off his belt, bounces you off the wall, beats the living hell out of you. Okay. Well, now you found out how far you could push old dad, didn't you? You tested him, and you got away with it. You tested him, and you got away with it. You tested him, you got away with it. Then you tested him, and you didn't get away with it. Well, you got away with it 3 times out of 4. That's pretty good. Well, human beings are like that. Kids are like that. Now, old dad, you know, here's dad. He comes down to Mount Sinai and he says, okay, kids, let me tell you how this game's got to be played. And your great-great-great-granddaddy, 84 generations back, you know, about 3100 B.C., they all said, all that the Eternal has done, we will do and be obedient. Give us all these neat benefits. And so we got all these neat benefits. And then little by little over time, we didn't perform on all of the terms and conditions of the contract. And it seems like we're getting a little bit more and more lax as time goes on. And the preachers are out here telling you, well, it's all been nailed to the cross, you know, and taken out of the way, and you don't need to worry about that no more. But kids, if you'll pay attention now to what's going on around you, the earthquakes are getting more frequent and they're getting more violent. Now you got global warming that Al Gore is blaming on you and me, burning up too much gas and using too much electricity. He didn't say anything about those sunspots up there. I always figured that the guy that made the sun, the moon, the planets, probably has more effect on the weather here on planet Earth than Pacific Gas and Electric or Exxon Mobil. Just my common sense tells me that, but you know, if you want to listen to Al Gore, get after it. I think that if Al Gore shut his mouth, we'd have a whole lot less hot air and a whole lot less global warming. But that's just my personal opinion. Now there's a little bit more to the story here. And he says, except those days should be short and there should no flesh be saved. This is verse 22. Listen to this. Listen to this. He says, this thing is going to get so bad there's never been anything like it. And he says, except those days should be short and there should no flesh be saved alive. But he says, for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Well, that's the good news. Now, last time I heard, this is many, many years ago, there's a guy by the name of Edward Teller. He was called the father of the hydrogen bomb. And he wrote an article one time for the San Francisco Examiner. I was just a kid, probably 18, 19, 20 years old. Still had pimples on my face, and I'm not sure I was shaving 3 times a week. But anyway, he wrote this article in the San Francisco Examiner, and he described a 20-megaton nuclear weapon falling on Treasure Island. Not only, he said, would it disrupt the Bay Bridge commute in the morning, he said it would dig a hole 600 feet deep and a half a mile in diameter. Now that's 2,640 feet across. 2,640 feet. 600 feet deep. He said it would put enough material up in the air to kill everybody from the Berkeley Hills over to the Presidio and the San Francisco Hills. He said kill everybody from San Jose up to the Martinez Bridge. I thought, wow, that is something. That's a 20-megatonner. He said, then there'd be fallout that comes from, kill a bunch more over in Pleasant and Walnut Creek and on over to Tracy and Stockton and so on. Because the wind is typically, you know, from the west. So you people out on North Beach probably survive it. You know, that's the good news. You know, if you're living in North Beach, you probably survive it. Those of you living down on the marina, probably, you know, could put your head between your knees in that 3 seconds between the flash and meltdown. Put your head between your knees and kiss her goodbye. Anyway, that was the story I got. And he said that was pretty bad. And he said the world at that time, this is about 1957, he said the world at that time had 4,000 nuclear weapons, enough nuclear weapons, this is in 57, enough nuclear weapons to annihilate all life from off the planet. Those were Teller's words in the article. There was enough nuclear capacity in 1957 to destroy all life from off the planet. That was his estimate, not mine. And I thought, oh my God. we're living in the era of Matthew 24. I don't hear any preachers out here telling you that story. And so I thought, hell, just a crummy plumber come along here and tell you, well, let me tell you, did you ever read this? Matthew 24. It's quite a story. Now, this story goes along with some other chapters here. If you got a pen and paper, write this down. I'll tell you the answer here. You want Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. The reason you want those three chapters together, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, is because Matthew doesn't tell the whole story. Luke and Mark add a little bit more to it. It gets worse. Mark doesn't tell the whole story, but Matthew and Luke, along with Mark, tell you the whole story. So you need those three. And for you Christians out there, it's okay. You can read those three chapters. They're in the New Testament. You've probably never heard of them before, but I just thought I'd tell you. It's okay because your preacher will give you permission to read and believe what you see in the New Testament. It's the Old Testament that he's bummed out about. He doesn't want you reading the Old Testament. So you Christians, you don't open up that book anywhere, you know, prior to Matthew now. Then you read those three chapters there, and if that doesn't scare the living hell out of you, well, then you're really a brave person, or a fool, one or the other. But he's got more to the story here. There's more to it. Listen to this. He says now in verse 23, if any man shall say unto you, lo, here's Christ, or there it is, don't believe it. Believe it not, he says. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Now behold, I've told you beforehand. Did you catch that? Have you ever heard of somebody claiming to be Jesus, claiming to be Christ? Hardly a week goes by that I don't get an email in here at the law school that somebody announces to me that he is the Messiah. And that I better pay attention. Or that he's heard of somebody that claims to be the Messiah. Or I get an email in here and he's preaching me a sermon about Jesus and about this or that or something else, you know. I don't know where they get all this crap, but, you know, they get it from someplace. And I was just looking here in Matthew 24. Listen, if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there he is. Here's Jesus over here. Here's Christ over there. Just believe. The boss said, don't listen to that kind of crap. So I don't. And then, of course, people say, well, you're not a very good Christian. And I tell them, helps, man, I'm not even a Christian at all, period. I try to avoid that like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Frankly, boys and girls, I'd rather be caught in Flo's whorehouse than I would in a local Christian church. Just my personal opinion. I think you'll do better. You're not going to do good down at Flo's, but I think you'll do better than if he catches you over here in the local Catholic church. Now, I just wanted to point out that these Christians over here in Boston, that is the Catholic Christians in Boston, admit that one-third of their clergy are pedophiles or sodomites. Both of those categories are capital felonies punishable by death. And they admit cheerfully that one-third of their clergy in Boston, Massachusetts. Kids, do you believe that one-third of the Catholic clergy out here in Los Angeles, Seattle, and San Francisco are something less? Huh? And that's just what they admit to. Now, what they don't admit to, I don't know any more about than you do, but like I said, at least the girls down at Flo's don't put on any pretentious airs about being righteous. Those girls are down there to make a buck. They're down there to spread pleasure and self-gratification to their customers, and they do a marvelous job. And they're not hypocrites. They're not claiming to be something that they ain't. That's why I always like Flo's whorehouse. The girls down there, they're just not telling you that they're holy and they're righteous and that you ought to pray to Jesus and that you ought to give your heart to Jesus today. No, sir, those girls down there at Flo's, they know what they're there for. And they ain't lying to you. That's why I always like the whorehouse better than the church. Now, there's more to it. And he goes on, he says a little bit more here. I'm running out of time, but I'm going to point this out to you. He says, wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he's in the desert, don't go out there. Behold, he's in the secret chambers, believe it not. For as the lightning comes out of the east and shines even to the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. He says, when he comes back, it's going to be like a bolt of lightning right out of the blue. There isn't anybody going to know about it a day, a week, or an hour before it happens. In fact, he was even asked, he said, hey, when's this going to happen? He says, hell, I don't know. Now, if Jesus doesn't know when he's coming back and says very plainly, I don't know. I get letters in here every once in a while saying, hey, Mr. Gordon, when do you think the second coming is going to be? Well, I don't know why people write me letters and ask me. Do they think that I'm smarter than Jesus? Do they think I'm smarter than God? Do they think I know more than the boss? Evidently, they keep asking. So I keep telling you, I don't know. I don't know. But I'm reading the signs of the times in here, and he says, you know, in verse 35, he said, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. He says, not only don't I know, not even the angels of heaven know when this is coming. So if you've had in your mind to write a letter here to the law school and ask George Gordon, when's Jesus coming back? I can just tell you right now, save your postage. I don't know. And I'll go a step further. Jesus himself said he didn't know. I guess when the boss tells him and says, hey, it's time to go, he'll jump on his white horse and he'll get on his way. But up until then, he said he didn't know either. But he said there's a lot of signs coming down. And when you see these signs occurring, when you see these earthquakes and wars and rumors of wars and false prophets, and when you see those rocks over there on the Wailing Wall tore down, he says, you'll know that your salvation is nigh. He says, it's right at the door. Getting real close now. But meanwhile, back on the farm, I'm not real too concerned. I told you at the beginning of the tonight show, I said, Jesus ain't coming tonight. I'm pretty cocksure of that. Now, of course, prove me wrong now when he comes back. Say, hey, you said he wasn't coming back last night. And look what happened. Well, I told you live and direct early on. I said, well, I was a liar. Been one for all my life. But I also wanted to point out that not only am I a liar, so is everybody else on planet Earth, so join the club. Well, I'm starting to run out of time here, so I'm going to have to cut it short, and we'll take it up right here next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, the subject matter of natural disasters. Natural disasters and catastrophes. They're going on right now around the world. This year, 2007, before the year's up, you're going to see another one. Just like you saw Hurricane Katrina, just like you saw that tidal wave in the Indian Ocean, you saw that big earthquake over there, killed 100,000 in Kashmir, be another one this year. Where is it going to happen? It's another sign of the times. All right, let me give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Air time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.